Who's up for talking nonsense?
Who's up for talking nonsense?
I'm the American Jezebel.
This is the Greasy Rupidian.
And we're talking nonsense.
We're really going to talk some nonsense today.
You know, last episode was really a fairly no-nonsense episode. There was not a lot of nonsense in last week's, or 2 weeks ago in our episode. And you know what? I'm really glad that we're coming back around to a little nonsense this week. This is not a no-nonsense movie.
No, when you said we're coming back to a little little nonsense, I was like, I think it's going to be complete nonsense.
Nothing but nonsense here. And we're also coming back to basics as well, just the two of us in studio.
Sitting orthogonal.
Yes.
Joe Rogan style.
It's not happening.
It is.
You're trying so hard and it hasn't happened.
It's going to happen.
I've still never heard someone organically use that phrase. So.
It's going to blow up.
Yeah, sorry.
It's blowing up.
Sorry. So, just the two of us in studio here again today.
And we're going to talk about...
But I'm a Cheerleader.
Yep.
1999.
I guess we should review, first of all, last time we didn't talk any nonsense, and so nobody agreed to disagree with us.
No agree to disagrees. I know. The peanut gallery was quiet on this one.
Super quiet.
So I think that they were just sitting back and letting our analysis just wash over them.
It was pretty deep.
All of our listeners just had to be like, wow, yeah. You know?
Maybe it was because we brought in a scientific expert, a physicist.
That's true. Yes. We had some real clout behind our discussion.
We did.
We had. It wasn't just two knuckleheads.
No, it was an expert with letters possibly behind her name at one point. But I'm a Cheerleader.
A return to nonsense.
Complete nonsense. All right. So I had not seen this movie.
I saw this movie when I was in high school, when I was probably about the same age as the main character in the movie. So it's been a while. I won't say how long, but it's been a little while since I've seen this movie. I'd forgotten a lot of what happens in it.
Okay, well, and we have to shout out every week. Amber Ruffin.
Yes. We do. Oh, every week. I wish she did one every single day.
Oh, man.
You know, if I could start my day with an Amber Says What.
I know.
She instead of The Rock having an alarm clock that you can set your alarm to when The Rock gets up and you can hear an inspirational message from him every morning, this is a real thing. And you get a little video of him at the gym, you know, getting shredded every day, right? You know what I want? I want an Amber Ruffin alarm clock.
Especially when she talks about how golden and beautiful she is.
I just want to wake up hearing Amber talk about how great she is. And you get a little video of Amber just like doing something random, not at the gym.
Oh, I would have a video of her when she punches the air. What?
In her little bomber jacket. A new bomber jacket every day, 365. That's the content we need right now.
I totally would subscribe to that.
100%. I would. That is something that I would pay a subscription fee for every month.
I would too. And not grouse about it.
They're coming after us. They're just going to make us subscribe to absolutely everything so they can just take money from us every month. Amber Ruffin, you can take money from me every month.
Yeah.
I will pay.
Yeah, I will too. I'll cancel my Microsoft subscription so that
no
I can afford it.
No more PowerPoint for Amber.
No more, you know, Word, no more Excel spreadsheet. Nope. I can't afford it. I got to watch Amber.
Have my morning dose of Amber Ruffin. What? Again, you cannot sing Dixie on this podcast.
What?
Amber can do it. Yes. No.
Anyway.
That will be taken out of context.
The Greasy Rapidian had not seen this movie. I'm going to speak of myself in the third person now. And so he was thinking about this, and he was thinking, what is this about, right? So the Greasy Rapidian says, what is this movie about? What is this movie about? So, true confessions, I know a couple things about it. I looked to see where we could rent it. So I saw that it is a white young lady who is the lead. And I had somehow in my head thought that it was going to be a black young woman. So I know that now. And I think that I know from you, Jezebel, that this is a conversion therapy movie. So I think those are the two things I know about the movie. So what I'm guessing that this movie is about is that they live in Texas and she's a cheerleader and somehow there's like a transfer student, a student that moves to their high school, a young woman who's kind of an outsider, a rebel, nothing like this town has ever seen, and she falls for her. And her parents can kind of sense it. Might even be that her father's the minister in town. That sometimes happens. So it might be that her father's the minister in town. And they can kind of sense that she's falling for this outsider girl. And then they are convinced that they need to send her to conversion therapy. And all her friends who are cheerleaders are dating, you know, the star quarterbacks and stuff like that. And she's not dating anybody. And when her parents say, we're sending you to therapy, to conversion therapy, she says, why? And they said, we're afraid that you're falling for that other young woman. And she says, but I'm a cheerleader. And then she goes and she goes through the motions of converting. And when she comes out, she still is smitten with this outsider. And the final scene in the movie is after prom and after graduation, they get in this girl's hot rod vintage car and they rev it up and they peel out of town together. That's what I think this movie is about. Nailed it.
100%. You weren't, I mean, there were elements that you weren't that far off.
I had the bad girl part.
You did have the bad girl.
Yeah.
We did have a bad girl in the movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We did have somebody who, yeah, we did have a cheerleader.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she did get converted to lesbianism.
She did by conversion therapy. Like conversion therapy actually made her acknowledge and then accept her own sexuality as opposed to what it was supposed to do. Uh-huh.
Right direction.
Mm-hmm. True directions.
True direction, thank you.
Yes, she is now an XX gay.
Oh, that's my favorite line. You took my favorite line. I can't believe it.
I didn't mean to. I'm so sorry.
Oh, we'll
erase this part. Erase this part out. Okay.
Well, we'll just do it right now. Favorite line. My favorite line is Lloyd and Larry.
Uh-huh.
Lloyd and Larry. What is their deal? Oh, they're just trying to help us out. Why? They're XX gays.
Well, and then immediately when they're in the van with them and she says, does that mean that you guys are like, what does she call them? The Underground Homo Railroad? Also very good. in their blue fatigues with a rainbow patch on the side. Instead of the American flag, they had the rainbow flag.
Anyway, that was
nothing could not be absolutely telegraphed in this movie.
That was my favorite.
If you're inside the home of a homosexual, the walls must be rainbow.
The candles are rainbow. The mugs are rainbow.
The pajamas are rainbow.
Come on, we're just knocking them all out. Favorite outfit. Dolph's pajamas.
Was that your favorite outfit?
It was my favorite outfit.
It was incredible when you walked in the rainbow pajamas.
It was my favorite. Oh, so I guess I'm done. I can leave now.
Oh, we're done talking about the movie.
Yeah. So much for all of our
all
planning.
The favorite line and the favorite outfit. We've run right through those. Well, we won't talk about characters then, so we can save your star by far.
Okay. Thank goodness. Whew, I'm sure you're gonna spoil that at some point.
I will try not to. I'm so sorry.
All right. Well, anyway, so you've heard what I thought about it. Let me tell you what the streaming service that we never name and we had to rent from to watch this. And so it was worth it. It was worth the $3.14 I paid to watch this movie.
You think that the movie was worth $3.14?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. I would have paid $9.99 for this movie.
Yes. If you had found out the only option was purchasing, you would have purchased.
Well, if, as long as it wasn't $17.99 like they wanted to charge us for the last one.
Yeah, for the HD.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have paid $17.99 for this, but I would have paid $9.99 for this. Maybe that's a new...
A good distinction.
A distinction we have, yeah. All right, so let me tell you what that streaming service says about this movie.
Tell me what the official description of this movie is.
Here it comes. A naive teenager is sent to rehab camp when her straight-laced parents and friends suspect her of being a lesbian. I put a D on the end of lesbian. It's nonsense, I'm telling you. We're going back to the nonsense.
This whole, yes. What was I saying?
It's subtle?
Subtle, yes. Yeah,
it's not subtle. She's a lesbian.
Yes. Just adding in extra sounds in all of these words.
Well, no, because it's making it more inclusive. After our discussion last time about the fluidity of stuff, lesbian, it ends lesbian. Mm. But lesbian, you can be more than...
It's more than just a lesbian.
Yes.
Mm. I see. Wow. You know what? That is total nonsense.
It's taken off, I'm telling you.
Oh, it's not taking off.
Yeah, orthogonal, just like orthogonal lesbians.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. We don't have the distribution to get all of your weird phrases going. Who talks about tire tar pugs? Nobody.
I'm just telling you.
So, the Living
Room Debbies, they got a tire tar German Shepherd.
Ooh.
And so I'm trying to get it going.
That's really hard to get going.
I'm going
to
get it going. Tire tar is coming.
Too many words. I would say that that's a fairly good description of the first 15 minutes of the movie. There's a lot more that happens once she goes to... I also... Would you call it rehab camp? I'm a little wary of that terminology to describe it.
Well, I think the...
It's not a camp.
Her mother...
It is supposed to be rehabilitation.
Yeah.
But it's not really rehab camp.
It is a camp.
They graduate.
Right, but they have all their camping things that they do.
I guess they do chop wood.
Chop wood and scrub floors.
Scrub carpet with dish soap. I don't know what they were doing.
There was a lot of I don't know what they were doing. Doing their nails, sewing a bridal gown.
So I guess it was kind of camp-like in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess in this case, I think we could call it a rehab camp, given specifically what they did at this facility that is meant to change them, you know, I don't know how they described it, but turn them straight, basically.
So they can lead a normal life, I think, whatever they say.
Right, right, yes. Which, yeah, isn't at all telegraphed, right, what a normal life looks like, according to the movie. So, you know, I think it is explicitly, you know, poking fun at conversion therapy, yes. Which is a really interesting thing for this movie to be doing in the first place, because it's funny, you know, we should get into a real discussion of the movie. But it is funny to me that this is a movie that from like the late 90s that's laughing at conversion therapy, right? And then in the last year now, there are actually two movies that came out this year, it's 2019, but in 2018, that were very serious dramas about conversion therapy.
Huh.
Yeah, that they've almost like swung back the other direction and are taking it very seriously. And this one is not taking it seriously at all, right? even though it is like in reality a really serious thing, right? In most cases, that it has done real harm to people.
Correct.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, the double entendre of the camp.
Uh-huh.
The super campy movie.
Exactly.
About, you know, a rehab conversion camp.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think
where
that's...
RuPaul is the straightest man there.
As it turns out.
Yep.
Anyway, so I'm wondering if they did it on purpose. They called it a rehab camp just to
highlight the campiness of
just
of the
play
film
up
itself.
The camp of
okay.
it,
mm-hmm.
And so that's why I was thinking it was called that. To
okay,
be so,
okay.
To give you a little clue in the description that it's going to be super campy.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, but I think it's a pretty good description of the setup of the movie.
Correct.
But not really anything that happens after she goes to rehab camp.
Well, because it's just shenanigans from then on. It's just one punchline after another, really.
Nothing but shenanigans.
I mean, it really is just like one joke after another joke after another joke, and then a little tender moment, and then more jokes.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty
much. I think this movie is mostly jokes and tender moments.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. I think that is that's a pretty good description of what happens in this movie. Do you want to talk a little bit about her process of going to
like,
give a little?
How
well,
she, what gave it away that she was a lesbian?
So, oh no, I think you're just retconning, trying to like. To cover up your mistake by saying, oh, I meant to do that. It's a new term I'm starting.
Really? Where would I learn to do that? What would be occurring in popular culture or current politics that would lead me to try to just pretend like what I said was what I meant to say?
And now you're going to have to say lesbian for the rest of your life because one time you added a D when you were writing it down.
No, I didn't write it down. I just...
When you typed it.
No, I didn't type it. Oh. I just misspoke when I read it.
Oh, when you read it. Oh, no, it's even worse. Yeah, you're just going to have to say an and for the rest of your life on lesbian. I think that does tell you what the basic setup of the movie is. So her friends and family suspect she's a lesbian.
Because?
Because you're always trying to make us eat this tofu.
Yep.
Because she's a vegetarian.
She's a vegetarian, which brings us to today's first sponsor.
Oh, who's our sponsor today?
Our sponsor today is Vega.
What is Vega?
One all-in-one shake. And so last week we were sponsored by Owen. And we have decided to move on to another try at our vegan breakfast. And so, as you know, I'm a vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to eat one meal a day with no animal products. And so my breakfast is usually that meal.
Mm.
And so I've been eating these breakfast shakes that are vegan. And we tried last week with our future sponsor. And so today's future sponsor is Vega. One shake. The chocolate is quite tasty.
Quite tasty.
And I had one before this podcast.
Nice. And you feel all the energy that you need to talk some nonsense.
Uh-huh. Yep. And I'm not becoming lesbian, but I do like my Vega shake.
Mm.
So thank you, Vega, for our future sponsorship.
Yeah, and for encouraging us to cut down on our animal product consumption.
Yes. Yes.
Mm.
It's very difficult for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying. One meal at a time, as they say in omnivore rehab.
Wait, did you acknowledge your problem to start with?
I am an omnivore.
Well, thank you, Vega.
And then I just drooled just thinking about it. Omnivore.
Oh my god.
For those of you who haven't seen the movie, when she admits to being a homosexual, she just long strings of drool.
She just starts sobbing and sobbing and just tears and drool running down her face.
Anyway.
Oh, just part of the utter camp of this movie.
But so she's a vegetarian, a dead giveaway.
She has pictures of girls in her locker.
And on her wall at home, she has a Melissa Etheridge poster.
And then her pillow is a Georgia O'Keeffe inspired pillow.
It's a vagina flower. And she does not like kissing her boyfriend.
No.
Who I always thought that Jimmy Stewart was the worst kisser in movie history.
Yeah.
This guy may be the worst.
Whew. I have to say, across the board, there is some straight up terrible kissing in this movie. This is some of the worst kissing put to screen.
I'll tell you what.
I know it's deliberately terrible kissing, but it is some bad kissing in this movie.
I would totally watch Kissing Booth 2 if it included the kissers from But I'm Not a Cheerleader.
Like, it was just a plot line where everybody has to pretend to be straight by kissing in a kissing booth. Yeah, the kissing booth was like so like homophobic. They wouldn't they would like barely allow the whiff that somebody might possibly want to kiss somebody of the same gender.
Yeah.
And that was like, oh, he's gay because he's wearing a sweater around his neck. Oh God. I apologize to the listeners for bringing up the kissing booth again. I'm so sorry that we had to mention anything that happens
in that movie, but I would totally watch Kissing Booth too.
True Directions. Where they have to wear Adam and Eve style clothes and kiss in a kissing booth.
That would be awesome.
All right, Vince, whatever his name is, call us about the sequel.
Yeah, they have to wear flesh-colored bodysuits that have strategically placed fig leaves and then kiss.
Where no one wants to be kissing each other.
Oh, I would definitely watch that movie. Forget about Vince. Whoever made this movie, I can't remember the writer.
I don't know who the writer was.
Jamie Babbitt,
I think, was the director of the film. Yes.
Anyway, number two. Kissing Booth 2.
Kissing Booth 2, True Directions.
go full out camp.
Just bring down the
kissing booth.
Yeah.
Because there's a bunch of middle-aged housewives who love the first one who would go, oh, there's a sequel.
Ooh,
and then they might go, what?
What? This is a takedown of gender and, you know, homophobia?
What has happened?
I loved the first movie. It was just such a sweet, abusive relationship.
They always say the sophomore jinx.
Yes, a reason they think she's a lesbian is she does not like to kiss her boyfriend.
Yeah.
But I think that that's more on him than anything else.
I think it's on him.
I don't think that baby Michelle Williams would want to kiss that boy either.
Yeah, she said she thought it was fun.
Yeah, but she's probably kissing other boys.
Maybe.
Who are better at kissing than that boy. Whatever his name was.
I can't remember.
Chad.
Jared.
I think it was Jared. Yeah. I was going to call him Chad.
Yeah.
So she's just utterly perplexed that they think she's a lesbian.
And we have to do some like camp shout outs. Her parents, Bud Cort.
Uh-huh.
Awesome, right?
Oh, so good.
So Harold and Maude fame. He's in MASH. He was in Brewster McCloud. If you have not seen Brewster McCloud, it is like crazy early 70s. Just ridiculousness. I highly recommend, because like if you were like, what kind of movies were people making? Because you remember the anarcho-syndicalist was saying, you know, Scooby-Doo's a weird cartoon because, you know, half the characters are stoned all the time. And I was like, well, that's nothing compared to H.R. Puffin stuff where everybody was dropping acid. Uh-huh. If you want to see what a movie looks like that was made by people that were dropping acid, Brewster McCloud is your movie.
Okay.
Crazy. And lots of people. Shelley Duvall, all kinds of people in it. It is a crazy movie. Bud Cort, he had a great 1970. Just killed it. So I'm always happy to see him. And he was the dad.
Yeah, and he was super fun in this movie.
The mom, Mink Stoll, who is a John Waters. That's how we recognize her. She's in all the old John Waters.
That's how we know. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh, well, that's her. You know? And so they put her in as the parent. And so they're going to make a super campy movie. And then as a little homage to John Waters. Not a big fan of John Waters, but, you know, as an homage to him.
Yeah. The mom is...
They throw in this, you know, part of his little entourage. She's in all the John Waters. And so she was in, you know, kind of his crew. And so she's the mom. So they're like throwing in these kind of icons, right? They're really nicely done. Not like Molly Ringwald in the other movie that we won't mention ever again.
Yes, yes.
Right? These were great.
They were great. And again, RuPaul is the straightest person in the movie.
It just goes on and on.
Yeah.
Kathy Moriarty, who's the camp leader, you know, had a great run in Raging Bull, etc. back in the day. And so she was great in it. So lots of good little cameos.
Yeah.
Oh, and so I have to say, I went on IMDb, right? Because I was trying to figure out who Larry was. Because he's very recognizable as well.
Yeah, okay.
And so I was like, who is he? And so I went on to figure out who he was. And then I just did the full cast. And we should have a new segment, music.
You don't have to do the music.
Anyway, Ione Skye was in there.
What?
I know.
Where was Ione Skye in that
movie? She was Kelly, and I was trying to figure out who Kelly was.
Kelly.
And I cannot figure out who she was. So she made like a pass-through.
She must have.
And so we should have a new segment. You'll never believe who was in this movie.
Wow.
And so I just go, Ione Skye!
In 1999, what was Ione Skye up to? Was she in the gay bar? Where was she?
I don't know. She just had a pass-through role somewhere.
If anybody watches this movie and can find out where Ione Skye showed up, she had a name.
Kelly.
Where would she have been in this movie? That's crazy.
It is crazy. So it's my new segment. We got to figure out who you would never believe was in this movie was in this movie.
Yeah.
And so she was my what?
Wow, that's wild.
Yeah. Ione Skye. So anyway, where were we in this movie?
She hasn't even gone to rehab camp yet.
She hasn't gone to camp because we had the great parents.
Yes, great parents. And also, who knew that this person was in this movie? Baby Michelle Williams.
Yes.
Is one of the other cheerleaders. Yep. This is like, I think, pre-Dawson's Creek Michelle. I think she's about to be on Dawson's Creek. Williams, or just about to just like burst onto the scene.
Yeah,
she's
going to be big.
The best friend with like three
orthogonal
scenes.
And lesbian.
She's going to be a lot bigger than orthogonal and lesbians. So there's baby Michelle Williams. Other person that just shows up literally for 2 seconds, Julie Delpy.
Yes.
Yes, who's just the lady who wants to dance with her in the bar.
Her character, when I IMDb'd it, lipstick lesbian.
Oh, yes. So sorry. I called her lady who wants to dance, but she was a lipstick lesbian in the bar. Yes, Julie Delpy was in this movie too, which I don't know which one's the first one. Before Sunrise, I think, is the first one. Yeah, Before Sunrise. I don't know when that came out, but it's probably before she was like big in America with American audiences. Yeah. So, might have been post that, but you would.
Well,
think
she's clearly a lesbian because she was born in France.
You're stealing my favorite line of the movie.
I was
you had to come back for it.
I was thinking that might have been one of your favorite lines. I wanted to just return the favor of stealing your favorite line.
So the whole structure of the movie is her family and her friends realize she's a lesbian, and they send her off to this rehab camp, which is in this lady's house, which there's so many like kind of fun, kooky production design details in this movie, you know, which it all is the camp, right? That, you know, it just drives, like, she's this perfectly painted, perfectly house, perfectly manicured lawn, and then it just drops off into dirt. Like, there's just like around the edges of it, there's like no houses on either side, there's nothing else happening. It just drops off and there's just dirt. You literally walk down the driveway into the dirt.
That's correct.
There's nothing connected to it. Oh, it's so funny.
I have to say, like, I love those visuals where there's all monochromatic, you know, so her office is all green, their bedroom's all pink, you know, the salon's all purple, you know, the room where they do therapy is all yellow.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Pushing Daisies.
It really is.
I love that aesthetic.
It's really fun. Like, the visuals. Well, and I do love, you know, obviously they're clearly doing this when she's kind of in the real world. At the beginning of the movie, everything is in kind of these 70s shades of, like, oh, you know, talking about autumnal tones of the, you know, somebody could be driving an AMC Hornet in that first part of it, because everything is very kind of retro and brown and like burnt orange and yellow. Everything is just in these like kind of somber brown and orange shades.
Earth tones.
Yeah,
everything.
It's all earth tones. And then she shows up to, yeah, and then once she shows up, the whole color scheme just shifts like so intensely. Yeah, so I did love the color in this movie.
Loved it. So anyway, she has to go through 5 steps to complete.
Yeah, so the rest of the movie is kind of structured in those 5 steps with all the shenanigans inside of each of them, right? The first one being that she has to admit that she's a homosexual, which is where all the crying and the drool comes in.
And so we don't have to go through all 5 of them, right? But then there's the big graduation at the end, right? And so that's basically the movie. and different of the young people who are at the rehab camp come to realize who they are, and that's kind of one of the things. You can only be who you are, right? If there was any little bits of seriousness, you know. And so the one young woman, what was her name? Jan? The softball player?
Jan was the softball player. Yeah.
You know, she realizes, wait, I'm not a homosexual. I like dudes. And yeah. So, you know, so I'm not as pretty as the other girls, and I have a mohawk, and I like to play softball, but I still like dudes. And then she leaves. Right, so she kind of realizes who she is, and
course, no one actually like congratulates her on actually realizing that she was straight. They're only going to congratulate the people who are just full on pretending to be straight. So she actually realizes, you know, all of these ways that I'm performing lesbianism doesn't actually mean that I'm a lesbian.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, Jan, I hope everything was good for Jan.
I think it will be.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think so.
And then you have to discover your root. And I think that was the source of your best life.
Yes. So they all have to go around and share what they realized of
what made them
a homosexual. Yes. And Graham, the bad girl, her root was, my mother is married in pants.
And the Jewish boy, traumatic bliss.
Yep. And then, yeah, the goth girl. I was born in France. They're all just ludicrous.
I missed a few of them because I was laughing so hard.
I was laughing really hard. I missed a few of them too. Yeah.
All go boarding school.
I think it's a reason that Andre did not pass his test is because he didn't have a good root either.
He didn't have a good root.
Mm, he didn't. And so, yeah, and then so they have to go through these five steps, and, you know, the main character is really committed to the five steps initially, right? Because she's like, okay, I'm, you know, now that I've come to this realization, I am going to fix myself. I am going to go back to my parents, and, you know, I'm just going to do the whole thing. I'm going to fix myself, and I'm going to become straight, right? Once she's come to that realization that she does like girls. So they all have to do lots of activities where they perform their specific gender roles. So the girls have to, as we said, do a staggeringly weird number of things involving like playing dress up like they're like the seamstresses on a wedding dress, and they go to the salon and paint each other's nails, and they scrub the floors, and they learn how to vacuum back and forth with like fake vacuums. It sounds like they're actually cleaning the house. They're just pretending to clean the house. And then the boys have to do some manly activities, right?
Yeah,
fixing the bright blue painted car.
Yeah, all the tools are blue. You know, as the vacuums were pink, right?
Yeah, the vacuums are pink, and the tools are all painted
blue.
And
their scrub brushes are pink, and their plastic and their gloves that they're wearing are pink. And then the boys are all, everything's blue, like the axes
are blue. The car is just spray painted blue, and the football is blue. So, speaking of them all trying to chop wood.
Yeah.
Do you have a segue there for us?
I do. That brings us to Terry searches for our non-monetized sport. Some music?
You don't need to do the music.
Yeah, so I'm going to throw out I watched a few over the last couple of weeks, but the one that I will fit mostly with this movie, the one that most aligns with this movie, is the World Axe Throwing League, WATL. And so I watched the WATL with three-time returning champion. I can't remember his name. Anyway, he's three times in a row, and he was in the championship round. I watched the semifinals and the finals.
Mm-hmm.
And they throw that axe hard. I was thinking it was just going to be like a light little toss. No, they get after it. They really fling that thing. Because
are there safety measures around the axe throwing?
There are. They're in
are
little
there
cages.
Are there a lot of people just like, yeah, I was going to say, are people watching, just like hanging around?
The people are behind them mostly, but they're okay. They're in like these almost like batting cages.
Okay.
Where they have, you know, and they're supposed to, I think, throw it. I don't know a whole lot, right? But I think they're supposed to throw about the same time, because at one point, one guy was delaying and he was kind of looking over at the other guy.
Oh.
And so then the referee had to step in and the referee gave a countdown. 3, 2, 1, and then they would throw.
Hmm.
Right? And so I think they're supposed to throw at the same time. And then the referee goes and looks to see. And if any part of the blade has touched the bullseye, then they get a bullseye. And so the referee gives a thumbs up when he goes and checks. And if they're outside, he'll get 4 points. Or if they're really outside, they get 2. Right? And they throw 6 throws on each side. I think 5 throws on each side, and they switch sides. And then if they're really close at the end, then they have to go for the kill shot where they throw it to a little dot that's up in the corner.
Ooh.
Man, they are wicked good at throwing an axe.
They're not like Andre, who's throwing the axe and it would have just flown back into the crowd.
No, they are not. And so it goes pretty quick, you know, like a match lasts maybe 5 minutes. You know, they get the axe, whoosh, they walk down, they check, they pull it out, they go back, whoosh, they throw again, and so it goes pretty doggone quick, which I like. I like that in my non-monetized sports, that like Botaoshi, you know, it's over in 90 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yep, not going to be 2 hours.
No halftime show,
nope.
Nothing. And so the winner won an axe.
Wow, okay.
And $1,500, so it is somewhat monetized. I don't know what fourth place got. I'm guessing like some coupons to the the local Steak and Shake.
Coupons to the like flannel store. I don't know.
Yeah.
What are axe enthusiasts love?
Well, maybe they get, you know, a discount at the local sharpener. I don't know.
Oh, that would be a nice prize,
actually.
It'd be
a nice prize,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it's pretty low key in terms of its monetization.
Yeah, I'm thinking they're not doing it full time.
I can't imagine they're doing this full time. It was quite enjoyable, I'll
nice.
Just have to say, you know. All in all, it was a good way to spend 10 minutes to watch, you know, three matches. And they had different techniques. One guy was one-handed, just flinging it. The other guy was 2 hands overhead. And I recently learned that axe throwing, you know, there were lots of axe throwers in the Revolutionary War, because not a lot of the Patriots had weapons. But they did have axes, and so there was lots of axe throwing that went on during the Revolution. So it's a pretty useful skill, and it is what our country is founded on. Forget about baseball and football.
Yeah.
That's not America's pastime. Yeah. America's pastime is axe throwing.
Because it's fun, and also you can murder somebody.
You can overthrow a colonial power.
Yeah, the most American sport.
Yes.
It can be fun. There can be murder. Who
Correct.
Knows?
Correct.
Oh, wow.
It combines the best of all things.
So I have so many questions about axe throwing as a way of doing battle.
Yes.
Do you just have the one axe that you throw and then you have to go into enemy lines to retrieve your axe? Or do you have multiple axes that you can just like throw a couple of axes at a time? It just seems like it would be treacherous to get your axe back, right? Because it's not like arrows where you're like shooting multiple arrows and then you just get more arrows and the bow is a part of it, right? So it seems like one axe would be a lot to carry and then you've lost it. You've gotten one guy, but then
okay.
you have to like wade into the redcoats to retrieve your axe.
This is clearly a call out to our readers.
We need some more information about this.
Axe Debbie, we need you to call us
in.
We
do. I know you're listening. Can you explain how this works?
This is my imagining of how it works.
Okay.
Is they have an axe quiver at their side.
Okay.
And they have little knitted animal heads on top, like golf clubs. And they pull off the knitted animal head. And then they throw that axe.
Uh-huh.
And depending on the wind and the distance or whatever, they might pick the 3 axe or the 7 axe
mm-hmm.
or the 9 axe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they just choose. And then after they've thrown one, they still have a few more. And as the battle goes on, you pick up some axes that have either hit their mark. Like when these guys pull the axes out of the wall, they really have to get after it because
yeah,
it goes in deep.
I would imagine it's the same. If
it
it's
sticks.
In your, if it's in somebody's chest.
In their head.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
The kill shot, they call it, when they hit the little dot on the side.
Yeah, I'm thinking there were some kill shots.
I'm thinking that's what that
meant. That's what you went for.
Hit them in the head rather than in the torso and had them bleed out.
Yeah, it's probably kinder.
Yeah, I'm thinking a lot of shots, though, where you throw for the torso and let him bleed out.
Yeah.
And so
it's a bigger target, too.
It's a bigger target, and you don't want to miss because you only got
you don't have that many. I know.
Four or five axes.
Yeah, that's my real question about the axes. Is I recognize their utility as a weapon, but I'm just curious about that, you know? Does that mean that you can have, like, an axe caddy who's got a little cart behind you?
Yeah, like
you
some 10-year-old boy that plays the fife, and then when he's done fifing, he hands you your axe.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. You're like, oh, I'll just bring my son, and he can caddy for me. He'll bring my axes to the battle.
Okay, well, the thing that I just can't understand is why have I not seen a revolutionary axe collection on Antique Roadshow?
Yeah.
Somebody has to have, like, this is my great-great-grandfather. He fought alongside George Washington.
Yeah.
And this axe is actually signed by George Washington, Nathaniel Hale.
Do you think that this is part of, you know, like, if they do they do, like, Revolutionary War, like, reenactments? Because I know people are super into Civil War.
They have, like,
War
rubber axes that they throw.
Exactly. And then totally. You have to go, oh, God, you got me with the rubber axe. You know? How great would that be? You know,
Axe Debbie, please call us.
Are there not people who are doing Revolutionary War axe reenactments?
Axe Debbie, we need to hear from you.
We need an Axe Debbie out there.
All right. If that wasn't enough nonsense for you, stay tuned.
Yeah, you were like, God, last episode was great.
All right, well, back to the movie.
Yeah, let's bring it back around. But really, seriously, Axe Debbie, you know, get back to us about this because I'm really curious.
And also serious, Joel Courtney, call us!
Joel Courtney, call us! Come on!
Come on!
Do you think it's because we really did only one of his movies and we have to get him in. We got to look at the rest of his filmography as
well. Yeah, I think we do. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll do another one of your movies. But we were so nice to him in our review.
He
originated Star by Far.
He is
Joel Courtney,
the original.
You are the original
OG Star by Far.
Oh, you're the original star.
Call us, Joel. And if you know anything about Axis, you will be a god.
Oh, God, that would be amazing. What if he can tell us about it? Two in one. He's Axe Debbie and a star.
Okay, back to the movie.
So they're all performing gender, throwing axes, trying to split logs and things like that. So what else do you want to talk about with this movie?
Because I think the other part of that was that you know, RuPaul said, if I ever catch you looking at a guy that way, you're watching sports all weekend. So hopefully they're watching the axe throwing. Okay, now I think I'd like to just cut to the chase. You know, this is liminal space coming of age. So what's her dilemma, obviously?
Yeah.
And who is this movie made for? I just cut right to the chase.
It's a really good question.
Right?
Yes.
And so clearly, you know, her liminal space is around her sexuality. Her sexual identity and who she thought she was and who she's becoming and then how she's going to relate to that. And we can even say her love interest, Graham, has had the same dilemma.
Yeah, because I do like that we get a little, you know, the Graham is kind of this, like, classic bad girl. She's smoking and she's like, it doesn't work. I'm just here because I got caught. But then you can see the pressures that are on her as well. And she's actually the one that almost caves more to the outside pressures than Megan does. So they're kind of both going through that same, you know, who do I want to be?
And what am I willing to put at risk to be who I want to be?
What do you think?
I don't know, you know. So, I mean, it's pretty tropey in terms of the outcome. There's no real surprises.
That's what I was thinking while we were watching it, too. This isn't a movie that you're going to go in and then be like, wow, I never saw that coming. You know, the minute we see Graham, you're like, oh, this is the bad girl that she's going to fall in love with. You know, oh, she's got a heart of gold. And yeah. And it's kind of funny because it's like this super campy movie, but it's this classic rom-com a little bit too, that they're at loggerheads first, right? And they don't like each other and they sit at different tables and but it's all in conversion camp. You know, Graham's at the cool table and Megan has to sit at the uncool table with the Australian girl. Oh, Melanie Lynskey's so cute in this too with her little glasses. And, you know, and then they realize that they actually love each other, right? And then they've got the big Graham grand gesture at the end, which, again, another scene that I loved, that the big grand gesture at the end of the rom-com is her doing a cheer for her in her cheerleader uniform.
1, 2, 3, 4.
5, 6, 7, 8. God is good. God is straight. Oh, so there are no surprises in this movie, really.
No surprises.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say, like, of all the movies we watched, this is the most predictable.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even more than Be Somebody, that there's not much to this in terms of the depth of it. It's just mm-hmm. making fun mm-hmm. of conversion,
mm-hmm.
right? And of course, her parents come around at the end because they're going to a parents mm-hmm. And families of lesbian.
We have that little epilogue at the end there,
yeah,
which they treat as though it's AA.
Yeah,
because they introduce themselves and say, "Hi, I'm Peter, and my daughter's a lesbian,
a homosexual."
Oh, right. A homosexual. Yes.
Hi, Peter.
So I guess they're also kind of making fun of PFLAG as well, then. That it's the support group for parents dealing with oh no, my
the
gay
shame.
Child. Oh, we're all here for you. Does anyone want to speak to their experiences?
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny too. You know, they're just making fun of everything here.
They pretty
you
much
know,
are.
Almost everything. But it's balanced
they
by...
pretty much are making fun of everything, because even the gay house...
The XX gays, you know, they're kind of ludicrous. Everybody's ridiculous.
The gay safe house is just...
Yeah, everybody is ridiculous in this movie. And they're, you know, it's... I think they're making fun of everybody, but it's also like a very sweet movie at the same time, right? So they're not making fun of conversion therapy. They're not making fun of the XX gays. They're not making fun of the parents in a way that's really mean or cutting, right? All of them get moments of like, these are people who are trying their best too, you know, and the parents aren't evil. I mean, the one, you know, Graham's parents kind of are. So there's, you know, but none of the other parents, you know, are evil. Even, you know, the lady who runs the camp, you know, she just, they're making fun of her, but not in a way that really, really mean or cutting. And that the XX gays are ridiculous, but they're also really sweet, you know, and clearly love each other and run this like safe house for the gays, you know, and take them out in a van to go to a gay bar, you know. There's so much like kind of sweetness to this movie too, which I didn't remember about it, you know. I kind of remembered the ludicrous color schemes and kind of how like visually campy it was, but I forgot that there is like a lot of really sweet stuff in this movie as well.
No, because there's like the one moment where they sneak off, Megan and Graham's, they sneak off and they have their like moment of passion so that they can tell how much they care for each other. And it's like this crazy lighting scheme again.
It's like super close in on them.
Yeah, it's almost like you're in a womb.
Yeah, because
like,
they're
we
all
even
in
sure
all the
where they were.
Stuff. Like, I don't know, were they in the...
The solitary dollhouse?
Or were they in the doghouse? Like, I don't know where they were, and the light was crazy.
And the music was awesome, though.
Yeah.
Great soundtrack.
There was some great music in there, too.
And so we're going to shout out our soundtrack.
Yes. We have been neglecting him, but we want to thank Kevin MacLeod again.
At incompetech.com.
You do some great work over there.
Thanks for the music, man.
Yes.
And so you should get on a movie, maybe on KB2.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
The soundtrack was great. So you have this moment of tenderness, and I think it's like probably one of the only real moments in the movie, right? All the rest is camp.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is kind of that thing where they take a moment to be kind and tender
mm-hmm.
to these people as they're going through their liminal space, if
mm-hmm.
you will.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I would say that's like the crux of the movie.
Is that scene with Graham and Megan?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they actually have like a, you know, conversations too. Like they have a conversation about like things that are important to them. And Graham says, you know, she kind of laughs when Megan says, you know, again, the movie's called But I'm a Cheerleader. And she's saying, I really honestly, like, I love cheerleading. It's the thing that's made me happy. And Graham says, you know, kind of laughs and then says, well, you at least you have something that you really love.
Yes. But I think the other thing is like in a meta moment,
mm-hmm.
she says earlier, because she talks about being a cheerleader, and she said, well, that's how cheers are. They're supposed to be simple and make people feel better. which is kind of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's supposed to be simple and make people feel better.
Yeah.
And so who is this movie for? I think that is the key line to say this movie is for. And so even if it's for
the
parents,
movie is kind of a, it's, you know, it's kind of a cheer in itself.
The movie is a cheer, uh-huh. right? It's a cheer for the parents who are like, oh, our daughter is a vegetarian lesbian.
Uh-huh.
And.
Lesbian. Anyway. I'm not using it.
So, but then at the end, you can see, oh, you know, it's okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even
and
though
we don't see the journey of the parents.
No,
from,
and even
from
though the mom's still struggling
mm-hmm.
and the dad is uncomfortable in his speech around it, right? You can still see that it's okay, right? It's a simple little cheer, right? And their tender moment together, it's a simple little cheer, right? And so we just have these, you know, even when Andre stands up and, you know.
Yeah, what does he say when he doesn't pass?
I don't need some fake sissy hetero telling me that I'm all that. I know I'm all that or whatever.
Yeah, he's like, I don't need some sissy who just proved he's straight telling me how sexy I am.
I know I'm sexy. And so it's a cheer, right?
Uh-huh.
And so I think it is. Like, the whole movie is just like a simple thing to make people feel better about who they are, regardless of which person they are.
Yeah, that you could be multiple people inside that movie.
Yeah, and so that's what I would say, that's who the movie's for. Anyone who has a relationship with the issues around sexuality that makes them uncomfortable, here's a little cheer for you. 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, you're the one that I adore. 5, 6, 7, 8, you can't fight the fate, or whatever she says.
Yeah. Oh, I want you to be my mate.
She says too, but yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that's the message for, you know, I mean, again, it's, you know, one of my favorite things in life, the Tom Robbins Jitterbug Perfume, Albert Einstein's last words, Erlichter. And everybody's like, what does it mean? Lighten up. And so if we compare this to the last week that I just did not like at all, even that little scene where they're together, that they actually have a reason why they're together. You know, I really like that you're so good and pure, that she likes that about her. And the other, I think she doesn't say it, but she's attracted to Graham because Graham is just like, this is who I am.
She knows who she is.
Yeah. And so she's like, oh, she knows who she is. And so even when Megan goes to the house, she's kind of talking with Dolph and is like, well, how do you know? And he's just like, you get to just be who you are. And she's like, oh, and so you can see how much she's struggling. And then she realizes that Megan is the one that has said, it's okay to be who you are. And that's why she goes back to get her, right? Because it's the gift that she gives her, right? And they do it in this really tender, passionate way where they care for each other, right? And you can kind of get a sense, you know, throughout the movie as it builds up, as they start to care for each other, when they're washing dishes or where they sit next to each other and they touch arms.
Yeah, yeah. It really builds in a really sweet way.
It does. That they mm-hmm. kind of exploring their tenderness towards each other.
Yeah, and it is very tender, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the previous one, right? Right? You just don't get that sense. And so I thought this was a much, much lovelier movie. And who is it for? I think it, you know, like for us, it was just funny. We just, laughed and laughed and laughed. And so it's just high camp, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so for us, it's just high camp.
Yeah. And I think that it is kind of nice to think about it in like an Erlichter lighten up kind of way as well, given to thinking about, like, you know, that there might be people who are upset that it's kind of taking this kind of campy version of something that is really serious, and that, like, in the last year we've had a couple of, like, very serious movies about the same kind of topic, and that they're just saying, like, you know, that it is like a lighten up kind of moment where, you know, they're saying, like, you know, that these conceptions of gender are ridiculous and these ways of, like, performing it are kind of, you know, ridiculous. And so we're going to do it to such an it can't be extreme that you are really forced to kind of think about, like, oh, that is really silly that we have to do it that way. It's nice that you can kind of take something like that and then turn it into something that is both campy and hilarious and also just full of a lot of, you know, genuine sweetness as well. I did really like that. I totally agree. It is kind of just a little cheer of a movie.
I think the last time you said, you know, people really liked Call Me By Your Name because there was no impending trauma to a homosexual relationship, right? And so I would say, yeah, but this one was much, much lovelier in terms of the tenderness between the two characters.
Yeah.
And there was no trauma. And nobody's root was, well, I guess maybe the Joel, that he had a traumatic bris.
Yes, yes.
But nobody was like this serious, heavy, being gay, there's going to be something awful that happens to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
there
I think
that
there was
that
like,
sense in the movie at all.
There was some of that in that, the only place that I feel like that did come in is like her kind of confronting the idea that like she can't be the person that she kind of thought she was going to be, impending trauma. I think the impending trauma was that her parents would disown her and that like she wouldn't have her family anymore. And I think that the thing was her coming to grips with both, okay, my life isn't going to look like the cookie cutter thing that I thought it was supposed to, and that maybe that wasn't what I wanted all along, right? That she's getting agency in that whole thing. And so I think that the only shadow of that kind of trauma over it was like, my family's going to disown me and I'm going to lose my parents and I'm going to lose the people closest to me. But, you know, so much of it was her saying, what do I really want? Kind of that liminal space, right? What do I really want? Who am I? Who do I want to be? And that wasn't full of trauma either. And then her parents come around. So then they take that part of it away as well.
You're right. Yeah. So a very light shadow.
Yes. Yes. A light shadow of that. So, and I did like, you know, I think that I was trying to think about it a little bit too, because, you know, especially I think some of the male characters in it are a little bit more kind of stereotyped and flamboyant, like Andre, for example, but even Joel and some of the other ones, you know. And it is funny that they made the girl who was kind of the most stereotyped lesbian be the one who realized she was straight. because I think that, you know, most of the for the vast majority of the movie too, none of the people who are like the gay characters are like, we're not laughing at, oh, look at how flamboyant they are, right? We're laughing at, look at how silly it is for them to do these heightened performances of what their gender should be, right? Like that was what we were laughing at, not like, oh, look at how bad at football he is because he's gay, right? That wasn't the joke of the movie. So, you know, each of them had like such fun little like particularities to them too that was really nice as well. So it was even funny earlier on when she like, you know, she's come to the realization she's a lesbian, but then she finds the two boys kissing and she's like, ew, ew, ew. You know, it's still all of that, you know, again, laughing at like her internalized homophobia, right?
Right. She's in that room masturbating to
yes.
visions of the girl.
Yes. But then she finds two boys and she's like, what?
Yeah,
ew.
Yuck.
Two boys? So, yeah, yeah. All of it is kind of that like ludicrous campiness, but it's laughing at like those things as opposed to laughing at them.
It's a very fine line they walked.
It is. It's very fine.
And I think they did well.
I think they did well. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Do you have a star by far?
Well, rating and star by far, yeah. Then that brings us to that, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Lastly, before we get into the star by far and the rating, I do want to shout out a podcast. This movie, we had this very, in the last couple of movies, we've had these visions of kind of gay love, right? And we're going to continue to do that. But I do want to shout out, I think I've shouted them out before, but I'm going to again because I love them so much. My absolute podcast crushes, Jenna Wortham and Wesley Morris over at the New York Times and their podcast Still Processing. Their second to most recent episode was about the Netflix series Sex Education, and they were talking about how sex is portrayed on screen through the lens of Sex Education, this new show on Netflix, and then kind of tracing how it's been portrayed over the last like 30 or so years on screen. And it's somewhat related to some of the stuff that we're talking about in these couple of episodes. It's not specific to, you know, gay love and like gay expressions of sex and love, but it's really good. And it allows me to also plug the Netflix show Sex Education, which I think has a little bit of this spirit to it. You know, it's not as campy as this is at all. all, but it has a lot of kind of the same, some of that same tenderness. And, you know, it's a really, really sweet show about love and sex in a way that, like, a lot of times is not shown on screen. And there's a lot to love about it. So
including
Gillian Anderson.
Smoke show.
She is so, so great. And so, yes, so beautiful.
And it has brought us to our new quote. What did Jenna Wortham say?
As Jenna Wortham said about Gillian Anderson in Sex Education, she makes me excited to age because she just looks amazing.
At the risk of being a creeper, I said, Gillian Anderson makes me excited for women to age.
I think just like But I'm a Cheerleader, that walks a very fine line between compliments and creepiness.
Correct.
So everybody...
But I would just like, in my defense, to say, I say it because this whole crazy idea that women somehow are less attractive as they age is absolute nonsense. And so I say it in that vein. Stop with the nonsense. You know, for an older man, older women are smoking hot. And so it's just ridiculous, this notion that women somehow are less
attractive. It does go back to our creep week about
women's
value being tied to their youth and beauty.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because in the show, she's a smoke show because not only how she looks, but other characteristics about her. She is... powerhouse.
She is. She really is.
Yeah.
That
comes with age, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. So I recommend both the episode of Still Processing that's about sex education and other portrayals of sex in movies and TV. And I recommend highly the Netflix show Sex Education. Some good tertiary. Generally great. So
okay,
shout out
my star by
star
far.
By far.
Dolph.
Oh no! He is 100% the star.
100%
star by far of this movie is Dolph.
Yeah, we can agree on.
Can we just agree on this
we
one?
We just have to
Let's
agree.
Let's just agree that Dolph is the star by far.
He like leaves when he has to because he takes the fall for making out with the other guy.
Yeah, with Kip Pardue.
Yep, and then he goes and he lives in the halfway house.
Yep.
Homo Underground Railroad House.
Rocks those rainbow pajamas.
Rocking the rainbow. Then gives her the big talk about being who she is. You know, you just got to find out who you be. And he gives her the big talk. And then he goes back with her.
Mm-hmm. He takes her out to the bar, even though she's so sad. And he wants to dance. And he's supportive. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He is that star. He is the star by far.
He is the star by far.
So he's just killing it.
Yeah. He goes back with her and rescues... helps her rescue her girl and also gets his boyfriend back too.
Yeah.
They're so cute.
Absolutely.
Yeah. In his whatever those suits and dresses were made out of. Oh, those vinyl blue and pink outfits.
Absolutely.
Yep. And he gets his boy too.
Yep. And so I'm going to give my rating for the movie now. What I watched before.
Oh, what did you watch before?
I watched Bodyguard, a Netflix show.
Okay.
And so super suspenseful, if you can just suspend all disbelief, because it just makes absolutely no sense in any way. And so it's just one tense moment after another that if you just watch it for tension's sake, then it makes you tense. But if you think about it for even a minute, it's just utter nonsense. And so coming off of that, I was like, oh my God.
And as Hasan Minhaj said in his show, he was super into like the tenseness, yes, and the thrill of The Bodyguard. And then he was like, and it's also like very apparently Islamophobic.
Yes.
And so he was like, oh, if only I was white and I could just watch this without thinking about that part of it. So
I didn't want a spoiler alert, but it's the big spoiler at the end. Even the Islamic people that you had compassion for are just evil.
Really?
Yes. It was not a good twist. Not happy.
Wow. I haven't seen it, and that's disappointing to hear.
Super disappointing.
Okay. So you were primed to watch a sweet and campy movie about two girls falling in love.
It was medicine to salvage wounds. And so there's a good chance that it was the Nanetta fact, right? That I liked it so much more because I was coming off of a lot of bad things in The Bodyguard. And so I gave this 11,328 KBs.
Wow.
It was a very enjoyable way to spend an evening.
Wow. Interesting.
How about you? You watched Sex Education before?
I did watch Sex Education before. And then I also watched the most recent episode of the CW show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which I also highly recommend as well. And the most recent episode was a deconstruction of the rom-com. So it was really fun because this is a little bit of deconstruction of gender tropes and gender roles. And that was a little bit of a deconstruction of the rom-com and traditional heteronormative visions of romantic love. So I was really primed to go in, and I really enjoyed this movie. I guess I didn't enjoy it as quite as much as you. I thought this was fully like a kind of a three-star movie. So I gave it 1,636 KBs.
I think it may be a case of what I watched before.
I think it was. I think that had a real effect on it. So, Dolph. I love Dolph so much. I want Dolph to be my best friend. Have a sleepover in rainbow pajamas.
All right.
So, this was a great palate cleanser.
Yep.
And a real
agree
to agree.
Our always sponsor, Sustain a Butter. Thank you for being
thank
our
you, Sustain a Butter.
Always sponsor.
Thank you.
Delicious.
I know you don't listen, but.
And digestible. Nutty and nutritious. You are making it happen, man. Thanks.
Thank you.
So
join
episode
us in 2 weeks.
Four.
We're switching tones again.
What are we watching?
We're going to watch Moonlight.
Not Moonstruck.
No, not Moonstruck. Nope.
Moonlight. No. You can get it on a streaming service.
You can
rent it.
It's rentable. Barry Jenkins,
okay.
Moonlight.
Okay.
Be exciting.
I think that's it for our show. So
I think it is.
Thanks for talking nonsense.
Thanks for talking nonsense.
All right. 2 weeks.